Thank you for listening to this podcast from KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. We invite you to listen to more music and talk on our grassroots non-profit radio station in Laguna Beach, California, from anywhere in the world on kx935.com/listen or on our smartphone apps. But right now, here's that podcast from KX93.5.
KXRNLP Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach, KX93.5.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's time for the Friendship Show. Join the conversation. Every week brings a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends. Sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for over 26 years, right here in Laguna Beach, California.
Good morning. Welcome to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'll be your host for the next 60 minutes of community-supported radio. This hour is sponsored by Friendship Shelter, reaching out to rebuild lives for more than 26 years right here in Laguna Beach. Here on Friendship Show this morning, I really am very excited about the show that we have this morning, because, you know, we get a lot of people on this show, and so they have a lot of ideas, and we talk about a lot of philosophy and how things should be. But it's not very often that we actually get to talk to someone who is actually standing on the front lines, doing the work, making things happen on a day-to-day basis. And our guest this morning is Andrew Castillo. Andrew is the assistant lead house supervisor. I may be getting that wrong. But anyway, he's basically the guy that runs the house in the self-sufficiency program. That's the building located right on Coast Highway, the building that most people probably are familiar with in terms of Friendship Shelter and the programs that we have there. So very excited to have him on the show this morning. We're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to learn how that program works here on Friendship Show. You're listening to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'll be your host this morning for the next 60 minutes of community-supported radio. Always happy to talk about the topic of Friendship Shelter and the great work that's done in that organization every day of the week, 365 days of the year. Particularly very happy to have our guest this morning, Andrew Castillo, is our guest this morning. He actually works on the front lines of the self-sufficiency program every day, direct contact with all of our clients, keeping the trains running and everything on schedule. Andrew, good morning and thanks for being here.
Good morning, Mark. It's good to be here. I am the assistant lead house supervisor at the Friendship Shelter self-sufficiency program. Like you mentioned, it's on South Coast Highway here in Laguna Beach.
What is the address of that building?
1335 South Coast Highway.
1335 South Coast Highway. And that's really that program, the self-sufficiency program, is really sort of the, I think we refer to it as the flagship program of Friendship Shelter. It's the original program. It's the program that's been around the longest. It's had a tremendous success rate over the years. And the organization and the community are both very, very proud of the rehabilitative work that happens in that building. Your title, Assistant Lead House Supervisor, what is that title? What do you do there?
So we have 6 house supervisors on staff at the self-sufficiency program. There's a lead house supervisor, and her name is Carly. So she's my boss, and I'm her assistant. So what I do is not only all the duties the other house supervisors have to do, but just make sure everyone is doing their jobs correctly, and a lot of paperwork and filing and different things like that, and auditing, just to make sure everything's running smoothly.
How long have you been in the self-sufficiency program?
A little over a year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You're still kind of relatively new.
Yeah, so a year and 3 months, actually.
I feel like you've been there much longer than that.
It feels a lot longer, to be honest.
Does it?
Yeah.
filing and auditing. What sort of filing and auditing are you doing? Because you're tracking the progress of clients in the program all the time, right?
Yeah. So we require residents to save money, so making sure all the books are correct and up to date, making sure drug tests are being filed, making sure we record all the services we provide, and making sure we record different encounters that we have with clients, whether they are positive or negative, so we can ensure we have a successful rate in our program.
Do you have any idea what the success rate is in that program right now?
Yeah, currently it's over 70%.
Is it really?
Yeah.
What do you call success in that program?
Having being housed and having an income when they move out. So a lot of people, when they move in to our program, they don't have an income. They're living on the streets. They don't really have contact with their family. So we really want them to regain all of those elements. And we help them get in contact with their families again, rebuild relationships, help them stay sober so they could keep employment and file for a disability if needed.
And at the end of the day, 70% of the people who enter the self-sufficiency program leave with income and a place to live.
Yes.
And then all of the other things that you do are sort of about the quality of life, yes?
Yes.
And is there quite a bit of that? How much does quality of life matter in that program?
I think it matters a lot, because if you don't have a good quality of life and your mindset's not in the right place, it's going to be difficult to maintain self-sufficiency. If you're still struggling with your sobriety, it's going to be really difficult to stay self-sufficient once you move out. So
what specific interventions do you use that help boost the quality of life for people or improve the quality of life for clients?
Well, specifically for clients with alcohol-related issues or drug abuse, we do provide a drug addiction counselor, and he works with them through that. We also have a wide range of classes we offer. Volunteers lead classes. One of my favorite classes is called Self-Improvement, led by Jim. His name is Jim. So he comes in every Thursday.
Volunteer Jim.
Yeah, Volunteer Jim. older gentleman, really nice guy, really, really smart gentleman. So he comes in and he'll pick a topic every week and they'll break it down. So it either can be patience, it could be about talking about fear, it can be talking about stress and different things like that, and build those skills and attributes in the clients, which will improve their quality of life and the way they view life as well.
Is that sort of a discussion group?
Yes, yes.
People sit around and do that?
Yes.
You also have like AA meetings, don't you?
Yeah, we also have AA meetings.
That come into the building and talk and lead those meetings right there on site for clients, yes?
Yes, yes, that's correct.
That seems extremely helpful. And I think one of those meetings is now being led by a former client of ours, right?
Yeah, that is correct. All right. Yes.
How about meditation? You had a meditation class on the books there for a while.
We still do, actually. We have two meditation classes currently. Meditation on Monday night and mindful self-compassion, which is another form of meditation on Tuesday morning. So residents aren't beating themselves up over mistakes they've made in the past, you know, and really being self-compassionate towards themselves. And that, like you said, will improve their way of life and their way of living as well.
You know what I really like about that kind of self-improvement or self-help class is that if you can't demonstrate compassion for yourself, you'll never be able to demonstrate it for other people, right?
Yeah.
If you can't love yourself, you're not going to love anyone else. And so you have to resolve that relationship first, don't you think?
Yeah, I agree.
All right. How much contact do you, as a lead house supervisor, how much contact do you actually have with clients?
Every day I am just constantly talking to our clients, and I'm in constant contact with all our clients.
What are those contacts like? What are clients coming to you for?
It can be asking for the medication. It can be roommate conflicts. It can be conflicts with their work. And a lot of mediation, I would say, and just advice, resume building. I help with resume, looking for housing opportunities, looking for jobs on the computer. So just pretty much anything you could think of, they're asking me for help.
And you're kind of everyone's buddy?
Yeah, I have to be everyone's buddy. But whenever they're breaking the rules, I have to step in and make sure they're following the rules, making sure they're doing their chores, making sure the rooms are in order. So, yeah, I'm everyone's buddy, but I have to also stay on top of everyone as well.
I think a lot of people would imagine, and I can see why they would, that there's 32 individuals who live in that building in the self-sufficiency program, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
And these aren't private bedrooms. There's sometimes 3-4 people sharing a bedroom together with bunk beds or separate beds or those sorts of things. I think a lot of people would think that there would be a tremendous amount of conflict in the program and in the house, because you have people with a lot of needs. They're in a very difficult situation. They may have limited communication, interpersonal skills, and frankly that it would be bedlam. Is that true?
We have some conflict. Like you said, once we bring in 32 individuals with 32 different personalities, some having mental illness and some with drug and alcohol related issues, conflicts tend to arise, and then we try to keep that at a minimum. So whenever something arises, we highly encourage our residents to let us know first so we can mediate and come up with a solution before things escalate and friendships are ruined and trust is broken within or between roommates.
And how does that work? So if you're mediating a situation, how do you figure out what is the right thing to do?
Well, it's really about listening to both sides of the story and letting everyone know, like, hey, we're all here for the same purpose, to move on from this place, you know? There's no reason to have these conflicts sometimes. And letting them know, like, if you guys continue this, we may not be able to help you, unfortunately, because we're trying to create a safe environment for everyone.
And community is important, right?
Yeah, community is extremely important.
You know, that's one of the things that, you know, that I find is just the living situation itself is probably one of the most important and advantageous sort of learning tools that we have in that program. Is that, frankly, if you can live here successfully, then you should be able to handle just about anything.
Yep. If you didn't learn patience before living in the shelter, you certainly are going to learn patience while living at the shelter.
Because you have to navigate a lot of things.
Yeah. Yes.
What is how structured is the day or the program in the self-sufficiency program? Can you just give us an idea of what a typical day would be like?
Okay. So in the morning, we do serve breakfast in the morning. Residents, there's a wake-up call at 6 a.m. After that, breakfast is served. At 8:30, everyone has to start doing their chores, and by 9 o'clock, everyone is expected to be out of the house, either to looking for work or doing other things related to their progress. And then by 4:30, that's when residents are allowed to come back to the shelter. And also throughout the day, we have counseling meetings as well. And after 4:30 as well, counselors do stay to meet with clients. And throughout the day, early morning and late afternoon, that's when we have groups come in, and residents could either stay in a bit longer to go to those groups or maybe come back a little early so they could attend those groups. And then we have dinner served at 6. Usually we have what we call a guest chef come in, so a group of volunteers or a church group, a family, or just a group of friends come in to serve dinner for everyone. And that's at 6 p.m. every night. And curfew's at 10:15. Everyone is expected to be in the shelter by 10:15. And chores are supposed to be done by 10 p.m. Afternoon chores done by 10 p.m. And lights out at 10:30.
It sounds fairly structured.
Yeah.
Is that structure, do you find that structure to be helpful to the program, or is it just sort of aggravating trying to get all those things done?
I think it's really beneficial for our program. It allows residents to also work on their time management skills and a lot of individuals before this program, they didn't have that structure. So I think it's really beneficial.
Everything is a tool.
Yeah.
It's not just for the sake of doing it, right?
Yeah,
there has exactly. There has to be a reason for doing that. How did you work there full time?
Just about.
What's just about?
38 hours.
38 hours?
Yes.
You worked 38 hours?
Yes.
Huh. We're going to have to change that. Okay. Thank you for bringing that to our attention. How did you end up there? What brought you to Friendship Shelter? You answered some ad, I imagine.
Well, yeah, I actually saw the ad online. I went to Sonoma State and I graduated with a degree in sociology. So I wanted to help people already. I wanted to get into that field, but I actually wanted to help with at-risk youth. But at the time, I was only 20 years old, and a lot of these
you were an at-risk youth.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So at the time, a lot of organizations wanted someone who was at least 21 years old and a bit more experience besides just college, you know. So I saw this ad, and I live in Santa Ana. So at first, I wasn't even going to apply to this job being in Laguna Beach. So I was like, you know what, I really need to think about paying back my student loans. So I applied and I got a call back actually a few minutes later by a program manager, and I came in. I really loved the building. I loved the organization. I loved what it stood for. And I was just hoping that I would get that call back. And the next day, my program manager, she gave me a call and I accepted the job on the spot, and I started the week after.
Really? Yeah. So you came in and you learned about the program, saw where it was, and said, yeah, I would do this.
Yeah.
And has it met your expectations in the last year?
Yes, definitely. I learned a lot about homelessness, and I learned a lot about how the government is trying to end homelessness and how other organizations are trying to end homelessness.
What would you say? What's the most difficult part of your job? What do you hate the most?
That's a hard question. I would say definitely watching our clients struggle through becoming self-sufficient because of their mental illness or because of a drug and alcohol problem. I think that's always a struggle for me when I see someone I really want to succeed and their mental illness is just really getting in the way of that. And it's just one of the hardest things to watch and experience.
So many times, right? It's not an issue of will or desire.
Yeah.
And they have all of the will and all of the desire that you would ever want anyone to have.
Yep.
But they don't have the tools. I mean, physiologically, they don't have the tools to achieve what they have in their head.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I love about this program as well, we do have a psychiatrist on staff. So a lot of these individuals haven't taken medication in years, and it's really been harmful to their mental health. So she's been a great help to our program to identify mental illness in our clients and able to prescribe the appropriate medication.
And do you see that? The effects of that as being somewhat immediate and beneficial? Does it make a big difference?
It does. I've seen it really, really help people and really help them stay on the right track to self-sufficiency.
Appropriate medical care is crucial to what you do.
Yes.
All right. Most rewarding part of your job? What do you love?
Just watching everyone succeed, you know? Not just that. I love the fact that this shelter wouldn't be able to operate if it wasn't for the generosity and help of our neighbors here in Laguna Beach. Every day we get donations come in. We get food dropped off. We get clothes dropped off. We get bedding dropped off. And every time it just puts a smile on my face. And it puts a smile on the donors' faces as well. And then every time they come in, I let them know we're more than just a homeless shelter. We're really rebuilding lives here.
Oftentimes when I'm at work, I see you, your office is up 3 flights of stairs.
Yes.
Oftentimes I see you up and down the stairs, and down the stairs because somebody's in the alley or someone's in the parking lot. They have something they'd like to give us, and you go and you greet them and you bring it up and you take care of the paperwork and all of those sorts of things. I mean, that you put in some miles, don't you, when you're at work?
Yeah.
All right.
It's fun.
We're a sociologist. That's what you got your undergrad degree in?
Yes.
And then you have a philosophy minor.
That is correct.
What does that do? How does being studying philosophy sort of dictate how you go about your job or what you do or what you think about it?
So I would say two things. First off, it definitely made me more analytical and critical of things around me. And second, I think it's made me a more compassionate person when I think about what life means and really why am I here? Like questions like that. It really makes me kind of want to help more. Like I've been put here to help others, to make sure everyone is able to have the opportunities I've been given. So
yeah, no wonder they called you 10 minutes after you filled out an application. I can see that. They're like, get to see if you can get this guy to sign a contract today. We'd be happy to have him. You're in the process of finishing up your master's degree now.
Yes.
Which, by the way, aren't you like 19 or something?
I'm 21.
You're 21 and you're finishing up your master's degree.
I graduated college when I was like
19. You did? Are you really smart?
I was 20 when I graduated college.
And your master's program is in criminal justice.
Yes.
I find this fascinating. Can we take a quick break? And when we come back, I want to talk to you about criminal justice and what you hope to do with that.
Okay.
All right.
Sweet.
You're listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5. My name is Mark Miller. We've been talking with Andrew Castillo. He works at the self-sufficiency program at Friendship Shelter here in Laguna Beach. We're going to take this quick break, and we'll be back right after.
You're listening to The Friendship Show, sponsored by Friendship Shelter on KX93.5, the voice of Laguna Beach.
Welcome back to The Friendship Show. My name is Mark Miller. We've been talking with Andrew Castillo. He's the assistant lead house supervisor. I hope I'm getting that right. And he works in the self-sufficiency program at Friendship Shelter, sort of the flagship program of that organization. We were talking a little bit about what that program is like and sort of your thoughts on how that program is effective. But before the break, we were saying that you're actually, while you're working full-time, you're in school getting your master's degree. That's got to be pretty exciting. And you're going to finish that up here in just a couple of months, aren't you?
Yeah, I'll be done in December.
My goodness. And so are you excited about that? Or are you just going, oh, that's just going to be more student loans?
More student loans. But no, I'm really excited for it. And I'm really excited for all the opportunities that will open up because of having this degree.
I have a lot of questions for you as one of the newly minted master degree graduates in criminal justice. And what I really like about this is because you're just at the beginning of this experience and coming into this with a young, fresh perspective. Let me ask you a couple of things. In Orange County and across America, the largest provider of mental health beds in America is the criminal justice system. What do you think of that? Is it the right thing to do? And if not, how do you change it?
So, no, I don't think it's the right thing to do. Mental illness is very unfortunate, and it leads individuals to antisocial behavior and to commit crimes. It can. And these are individuals whose illnesses are greatly misunderstood throughout in society, in the criminal justice system as well. And it's unfortunate that we haven't been able to provide the necessary resources for these individuals before they commit a crime and after they commit a crime, because some of these individuals do not deserve to be incarcerated. And being incarcerated is extremely expensive, and it's a huge burden to society as well.
So the criminal justice system is dealing with mental health in our communities by default, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's only because there's no one else doing it, and you have all of these people who are sick, and they got to go somewhere.
Yeah. Well, no, not only are they sick, but they did commit a crime. That's the way they enter the system. So I would say sometimes their mental illness has led them to commit a crime or act in a criminal way, and yeah.
But incarceration is not necessarily the answer to that, or you do the crime, you do the time. What do you think?
Well, yes, but it's also about whether they meant to do it. Intent is really key to the criminal justice system as well. So if someone doesn't really have clear intent, or they don't really know what they are doing when they're committing a crime, I don't know how just it is to punish them for it.
Justice is important.
Yes.
Your emphasis in criminal justice is in crime prevention.
Correct.
What is crime prevention? I would think everyone would be for that.
So, crime prevention is pretty much police work, I would say, and different policies that are set by the government to help reduce crime and keep us safe. And so a lot of police departments still follow the standard model of policing and crime prevention, which is typically random patrols and just responding to calls. And that's the standard model. And now we are going more towards the community model of policing, problem-oriented policing, hotspot-oriented policing. So hotspot-oriented policing is the opposite of random patrolling. We found that crime is concentrated in specific locations. So if we could really target those areas, we could reduce a large portion of crime.
I'm gonna call out your sociology background here. I get that. I'm going to say those communities that have been identified as hotspots don't appreciate that.
Well, no, actually, I'm not referring to communities. I'm referring to specific locations. We find even in crime-filled communities, there's actually specific addresses within those communities that tend to have higher call rates than other locations within those communities.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Is this, but in crime prevention, so isn't this a sociological issue? And what's the intersection between sociology, law enforcement, criminal justice, and crime prevention?
Well, in the past, I would say there was really disconnect between all of these. And now we are really bringing them all in together with like community-oriented policing and problem-solving policing instead of like our old-fashioned standard way of policing, which, like I said, was just random patrolling and not really being connected with the community. So community-oriented policing is finding out why is a certain community experiencing higher rates of crime, and then problem-solving policing would be, let's come up with the way to attack this problem and figure out this problem and understand this problem.
Isn't the I'm just guessing. I don't know. You know, I know just enough to be dangerous. Isn't the answer to that poverty? And isn't the solution to that opportunity?
No. So even in impoverished neighborhoods, there's not really a high number of individuals who are committing crimes. So crimes are concentrated. Most crimes are concentrated in a few individuals. So everything about crime is actually concentrated. It's concentrated in a place, it's concentrated in people, and it's I think that's actually quite fascinating. So if we could target those places and understand those specific people who are committing the majority of crimes, we could really reduce a large number of crimes that occur.
And socioeconomics is not necessarily a determining factor?
That is not a determining factor, but that does play a large part. That is an element that can contribute to committing a crime in some individuals.
There's a lot of talk, certainly in California and in other communities, about homelessness in the criminal justice system. I don't recall what amendment they invoke when they talk about that, but you know what I'm talking about, making homelessness a crime. Can homelessness be a crime? What should the criminal justice system be doing about homeless people in America? Is it their responsibility?
Well, before I answer that question, I want to go back to what I just said earlier. So there are crimes that are committed by people and also more well-off neighborhoods. And like we said, there's crimes that are committed in impoverished neighborhoods. But I have seen a difference in the way they are treated once they enter the criminal justice system. So I just want to make that point real quick. But to go back to homelessness and the criminal justice system, We see that being homeless is seen as a crime. We criminalize being homeless when an individual doesn't have a place to go. We give them tickets for, and I don't think that's fair. It really just digs a deeper hole for these individuals, and it doesn't really solve the problem of homelessness.
And you, and it just makes it more difficult for the individual.
Yeah,
I'll tell you this: I had a police officer say to me that they went up to a court here in Orange County, and the judge said, "Don't bring these tickets to my courtroom anymore. I have important, serious issues that I'm trying to solve, and I've got a line out the door Monday through Friday. I don't want any more tickets because someone fell asleep on a bench. I don't have time for this nonsense."
Okay.
Would you agree with that?
I do. So that I there are communities with homeless court to deal with homeless tickets and things like that. And homeless court is able to really provide guidance to homeless individuals to the proper resources they may need.
Okay. Nationally, can I just get your thoughts on, in the last couple of years, law enforcement in general in America has come under great scrutiny.
I definitely agree with that.
In this country, does law enforcement need to change in America, or is it just sort of being manipulated and distorted for political purposes?
I definitely think the criminal justice system needs to go through more of a change. Right now, we are undergoing a change, but the change is not fast enough. Like I said, the standard model of policing is still current. We need to start operating under the criminal or the community-oriented policing. And also, I think in the police force, police officers see themselves different than civilians. They see themselves as a hero, and they want to catch the criminals. That's the exciting part of being a police officer, but they're not really focusing on crime prevention.
That's Andrew Castillo. He's the lead assistant house supervisor at Friendship Shelter, the self-sufficiency program. He's also about to become one of the new young leaders in the criminal justice system here in Orange County and in America. He's been our guest this morning. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. To the Friendship Show here on KX93.5. We've been talking with Andrew Castillo. He's one of the house supervisors, the assistant lead house supervisor at Friendship Shelter in the South Sufficiency Program. It's been great having you here. Thanks for coming in this morning.
No problem.
You were a little reluctant to do the show this morning because you were feeling a little nervous about it. And so you brought some backup. Do you want to introduce your backup for us?
Yes. I brought my girlfriend, Alyssa Seha. She's also working on a master's program. And yeah.
Alyssa, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
He was saying, I'm not going to do it by myself. So if Alyssa will come and sit next to me, I'm happy to come in and do it.
Well, he's been doing a great job, so he's been
a great guest, don't you think?
Yeah, definitely.
Alyssa, you also happen to be a volunteer at Friendship Shelter.
Yes, that is correct. I volunteer. Usually, like every other Saturday, I help with resume building at the Friendship Shelter.
And that's because you're getting your master's degree in human resources.
Correct.
So at some point in your career, you're going to be looking at hundreds of resumes probably, right?
Yeah, exactly. I look at a lot of them right now. Not so much screening them, but when I'm working with different candidates, so I see a lot of resumes come in and out. So I have different ideas of what they look like and what they should look like. So, yeah, it's been really great being able to volunteer at the Friendship Shelter.
And how long have you been doing that?
Like 4 months, five
probably.
Months?
Probably.
Really?
Yeah.
Did Andrew have to talk you into it or?
No, I mean, we kind of talked about volunteering. He mentioned the volunteers. So I was thinking of in what ways I could help. And I think that's probably the best service I could provide.
And how many resumes? So when you come in and you're saying like you come in like every other Saturday to help mm-hmm. someone put together a resume, are you working with one-on-one with clients or are you working in a group? How are you doing that?
So I'm doing one-on-one. I usually meet with like 1 to 3 clients each time I go. But yeah, it's been really great. I know there's been a couple clients that have helped that we've sat down and done a resume together, and they go out and look for a job and then come back and say they found one. And it's just like the best feeling ever.
That's what it's all about, right?
Yeah, definitely. It's great.
When you're working with clients at the Friendship Shelter, what are the difficult things about putting together a resume for them? What might they be lacking that makes them not as competitive in the job market?
Experience, education. And I mean, it depends on the type of job they're looking for. So that's how we always start off our conversation. Like, what are you looking for? What is like your dream job at this moment that you think we could obtain, basically? And I think that's the biggest part that's a challenge, is lack of experience and lack of certain things to be able to make it a lengthy resume where it just looks like you're filling up an entire page with all truth, because we don't want to lie either. We help buff it up and make it sound a lot better than saying, you know, I was a cashier. So I definitely help with that, but it's a struggle to make it lengthy, I guess.
Yeah, everybody does, right?
Yeah, I mean, because I still struggle with that.
Right, and part of that, though, is that you diminish your own value,
mm-hmm.
and say, oh, I was just doing that. I was like, no, you were doing more than that. You have to sort of step up, blow your own horn here a little bit and to accept the accomplishments that you've had in your life.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's when having somebody else look at it, it's a great help.
How do you help with once you get the resume in front of somebody and getting them to pick up your resume and say, I'd like to meet this person, is a big part of it. Do you work with residents about now, what do you say when you're in that face-to-face interview with someone?
So I've done it with some residents where we talk about like potential interview tips and what it will be like and the questions that a panelist or an interviewer might ask them. We do that from time to time, and other times they're just already confident and I go ahead, and if you have any other questions, come back to
me. Just say go get it.
Yep.
And then is there, Andrew, some angst, anxiety about what am I going to wear to this interview?
Sometimes. Some residents already have clothes. Other residents do not even own a suit, don't own a dress or slacks or a blazer. So we just hope that we have that in our donations closet. And most of the time we do, and we're able to help them out in that way. If not, then we send them over to the Assistant League.
The Assistant League will help us get someone dressed up for an interview?
Yeah, every now and then we send someone over there, and we always have to ask them, and most of the time they are able to.
And then don't you find, especially if the person going out for a job interview is male, don't you find then that there are probably, 8, 10, 30 fashion critics in the house that morning deciding on ties and shoes and socks and tucked in, tucked out, all of those sorts of things?
Yeah. And guys are a whole lot luckier in our program. We get a lot more suits donated than women business wear.
I would say, the perspective from my office, you know, at the end of the hallway, is that when someone is going for a job interview, and this is it. I mean, this is income. This is one of the ways that we judge success in the program. To see everybody in the house participating in that process. And, you know, how do I look? You know, can someone help me iron this? All of those sorts of things. I really find that sort of touching, that even though there may be conflicts that happen in the program, certainly, there are these really genuine, very special moments where everyone comes together for a common goal to help and support one individual in the program. Yeah?
Yeah, definitely.
All right. As always happens here on Friendship Show, we run out of time. Long before we run out of things to talk about, Alyssa and Andrew, you're leaving here because you have something important to do today, yeah?
Yeah, my sister actually got into UC Davis, so Alyssa, myself, and my dad, we're taking her up right after the show and dropping her off.
And in your family, if your sister's going to college, then she's like, 14 now or something?
No, she's only 16. I'm just kidding. 17.
She's 17.
No, never mind. She turned 18 like 2 weeks ago.
Oh, did she? Yeah. Alyssa, is your sister's 18, by the way. And you missed her birthday.
Yeah. We did, actually.
All right. You've been listening to The Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. Up next, Ida Mae, Tommy J, with some Radio Neighboring.
Thank you for tuning in to The Friendship Show. Join us every Saturday at 9 a.m. for a full hour of real issues, stimulating discussion, and the chance to visit with old and new friends right here on KX 93.5, Laguna's only FM.